Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really big question for anyone investing in real estate.
The big one.
Yeah. When is the absolute best time to sell that investment property? We're not just talking about getting a decent return.
No, this is about optimizing, really squeezing the most out of it.
Exactly. Getting that timing right. That can be the difference between, you know, a good outcome and a truly great one. A life-changing profit, even.
It's definitely complex, though, because... Well, real estate often feels like something you just buy and hold, right? An anchor.
Mm-hmm.
But smart investing means your exit plan needs as much thought as your buying plan, maybe more.
So it's a balancing act.
Totally. You're balancing market conditions where things are heading with your own personal situation, your finances.
Things like rental yield, I guess.
Yeah.
Maintenance costs.
Yep. Rental yield, those creeping maintenance costs. And the big one people often miss, opportunity cost. What else could that money be doing?
Okay, that's a key point. Because if you sell too soon...
You leave cash on the table. Potentially a lot of it.
But way too long.
And you could miss the peak. Get caught in a downturn. That's painful. You feel that tension.
Yeah, you do.
So we've basically identified three core signals. Think of them as forces pushing against each other. They help guide that decision.
Okay, lay them out for us. What are these three signals?
First, capital growth trends. Pretty straightforward. Is the value still going up strongly?
Okay.
Second, rental yield performance. Is the property actually, you know, earning its keep day to day?
Makes sense. And the third?
Third, and this is maybe the trickiest one, is opportunity cost. What could this capital achieve if you put it somewhere else?
Let's pause on that opportunity cost for a second, because you're right. I think that's the one most investors kind of push aside.
They absolutely do. It's easy to get anchored to the total gain since you bought it.
Like, wow, it's up 50%.
Exactly. Feels great, right? But maybe the current net yield after all the costs, maintenance, taxes, fees has dropped to, say, 3% a year.
Which isn't great.
Not if you know you could realistically take that same capital, put it somewhere else, maybe another asset, and get 8% or 9%.
Then holding on to the original property is actually costing you.
You're actively losing potential income every year you stand still. That difference, that gap, that's probably the clearest signal your asset isn't working as hard as it could anymore.
Wow. Yeah, framing it like that really forces a data-led decision. It's not emotional, not tied to how long you've owned the place.
That's correct. So if that opportunity cost is nudging you towards selling, you then need to check if the market timing is right.
You need the market to cooperate, basically.
You do. The idea is to be strategic, spot those shifts before the crowd does.
So you get a better price. And avoid getting stuck when everyone else is trying to sell.
That's the goal. Avoid that long, slow sales process in a cooling market.
Okay, let's dig into the hard data then. What are the key market indicators? The things that help pinpoint that potential exit window? We need more than just general optimism.
Right. And what's really interesting is how these indicators often show up together. They don't exist in isolation.
They paint a picture.
Yeah, they foreshadow a cooling phase. So first, obviously, is property prices.
Okay.
Steady increases are good, sure. But the real insight comes from looking at the rate of change and the price-to-rent ratio.
Price-to-rent ratio. Explain that.
It compares the median property price to the median annual rent. If that ratio gets really high, historically speaking.
Meaning prices have shot way ahead of what rents can realistically support.
Exactly. That suggests you're probably nearing the peak value for capital growth. That's your cue to maybe think about selling, locking in those gains before things level off or dip.
Okay, so high prices suggest the time might be good, but you need buyers. How do we gauge buyer appetite?
That's the next one. Buyer demand. You look for things like high inquiry rates, lots of calls, lots of viewings.
Multiple offers on properties?
Yes. Multiple bids, property selling quickly, short days on market. All that favors you, the seller, and pushes prices up.
And the warning sign.
A sudden drop-off in inquiries, even if prices seem okay for now, that's stagnation. Often the canary in the coal mine.
Got it. What about forward-looking stuff, like borrowing costs? Ugh. That brings us to interest rates, right?
A huge one. If interest rates are starting to climb, that's a very clear signal.
Why clear?
Because it means the pool of buyers who can actually afford to borrow is about to shrink. Pretty quickly, too. Higher rates reduce their purchasing power.
Hold on, though. If interest rates are rising, doesn't that often mean inflation is up? And doesn't inflation sometimes push up property prices, nominal prices at least?
That's a great point. It's a critical nuance. You're right. Inflation can lift asset prices over time.
So how do those two things balance out? Rising rates versus inflation.
The key is the timing, the lag. Rising rates hit affordability immediately. It puts the brakes on buyers right now.
While the inflationary boost takes longer to filter through.
Much longer, typically. And when rates jump quickly, that immediate hit to affordability often creates more fear and caution in the market than the slow creep of inflation boosts prices.
So you want to sell in that window?
Yeah.
Before the market really digests the higher rates and demand cools off too much.
Precisely. It's about timing that shift from growth to potential stagnation caused by the rate hikes.
Okay, that's a much more sophisticated way to look at it than just a simple checklist item. Now, let's look inside the property itself. Profitability.
Right. Back to the asset's performance. That's where rental yields come in. Your net return.
So even if the place is always rented out.
Yeah. Even if occupancy is stable, if your actual net returns are going down year after year.
After costs.
After all costs. It confirms that the capital growth, the paper value, has outrun the property's practical earning power.
So it's becoming less efficient as an income source.
Exactly. Which loops you right back to reconsidering that opportunity cost we talked about earlier.
Makes sense. And we definitely need to think local too, right? What's happening right there on the ground?
Oh, absolutely. Vacancy rates are crucial, a real early warning.
So if you start seeing more for rent signs popping up in your specific neighborhood?
That's a flag. It could mean changing local demand, maybe people moving out, or it could mean oversupply is starting to build, new buildings coming online nearby.
And selling before that really hits your area could save your returns.
It can preserve them, yeah. Sell while broader demand might still be okay. And finally, always keep an eye on government policy.
Like new taxes, zoning rules.
Exactly. New taxes, limits on ownership, stricter rental regulations. Any of that can squeeze your profitability.
And acting early, if policy changes look unfavorable?
Often pays off. Get ahead of the curve before everyone else reacts.
Okay. And for you, the listener, especially as you're operating in, say, the wider MENA region, maybe Saudi Arabia specifically. The sources are clear.
Yeah.
There's an extra layer here.
Yes, absolutely. Those global indicators we just discussed, they still matter, of course.
Yeah.
But you have to filter them through regional macro factors.
Such as?
For that region, you're constantly watching the global oil price, naturally. Local inflation trends are key. And, very importantly, government housing initiatives.
How do those initiatives play in?
Well, big government programs can suddenly change the whole demand picture. Or they might flood the market with new competing supply.
Yeah.
That can really shrink your ideal exit window.
So it adds another layer of complexity to track.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've looked at the market data, the external signals. Now we need to pivot back to the personal side, right?
We have to. We said it earlier, the decision can't just be about the market. The timing has got to fit your life, your financial journey.
Because there isn't really one single best time that works for every single investor.
No way. Which is why you need to really honestly look at the personal trade-offs. That whole sell now versus hold longer debate.
Okay, let's break down those personal factors. We touched on capital gains. When do you lock it in versus holding out for more?
Right, so you'd lean towards sell. Now, if all those market signs we talked about point to the value having peaked, a correction looks likely. Lock in the profit, reduce your risk.
And holding longer.
You might hold longer if, say, specific regional trends or maybe demographic shifts strongly suggest there's still solid appreciation potential ahead, like for the next 3 to 5 years, realistically.
Got it. Then there's tax. Always complex.
Oh, yeah. Your tax position is critical. Maybe you sell now because you happen to have other losses in your portfolio this year.
So you can use those losses to offset the property gain, lower the tax bill right away.
Exactly. Strategic tax planning. But conversely, maybe you hold longer because you're still years from retirement. You'd rather defer paying capital gains tax.
And let the rental income keep paying down the mortgage in the meantime.
Precisely. Benefit from that long-term tax deferral if it fits your overall plan.
Okay. And then just needing the cash flow needs.
A very practical one. If you need liquidity now, maybe to diversify your investments, pay off some high interest debt, fund a big life event like kids' education.
Selling frees up that equity immediately.
Instantly. But holding longer, assuming the yield is still decent, gives you that ongoing, stable rental income. That offers stability to your portfolio.
But properties don't stay new forever. Costs go up. How do you evaluate that maintenance cost tipping point?
You look at the trend. Are your maintenance costs, especially the big non-deductible repairs, consistently rising faster than your rental income is?
Eating into your net yield.
Seriously, eating into it, pushing it into the danger zone. That's a classic sign of an older asset just draining cash.
So you sell then?
Usually, yes. You'd only really hold if the property is still relatively new, low hassle, stays profitable, and maybe your depreciation allowances still offer a good tax shield.
Okay. And finally, the purely human element. Personal goals.
Yeah, this is non-negotiable, really. You sell when it aligns with your life stage, approaching retirement maybe, planning a big move.
Or just changing your whole investment approach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe shifting from active property management to, I don't know, passive index funds. But you hold if your main goal right now is building long-term, maybe generational wealth, and you have absolutely no need for immediate cash.
So the key takeaway for you, the listener, seems to be doing a regular checkup.
An annual performance review is essential. Compare your property's net return after all costs and your time input against every other asset you hold or could hold. That comparison brings real clarity.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit, because this is where things get really interesting, I think. Selling your property doesn't necessarily mean you have to exit real estate altogether.
Not anymore.
It might just mean pivoting. Moving to a, let's call it a modern alternative.
Yeah.
Something that maybe sidesteps some of the traditional hassles.
This is a huge trend we're seeing. A really significant shift towards digital ownership models.
Digital ownership.
Yeah. Investors are moving away from the headaches of direct ownership. You know, the 3 a.m. calls about a leaky pipe, the legal paperwork, finding tenants.
All that hassle.
All that hassle. And they're moving towards passive, often fractionalized ways to invest in real estate. It directly tackles that problem of rising management burden and costs we just discussed.
So how does that work? What's the actual mechanism for pivoting like that?
Well, typically it involves models based on real estate-backed tokens or fractional ownership platforms. So you sell your physical property.
Get the cash.
Get the cash. And then you can convert those proceeds into essentially digital shares or tokens that represent ownership and maybe a diversified pool of properties, income generating properties.
Okay. So your capital is still invested in real estate as an asset class. You still get exposure to the property market.
Exactly. But without any of the direct landlord responsibilities, none of the management grind.
What are the main advantages there?
Well, increased liquidity is a big one. It's usually easier to sell a token or a fractional share than a whole building. And diversification.
How so?
Instead of owning 100% of one building, your money could be spread across tiny pieces of, say, 20 different buildings in different locations or sectors. That drastically reduces your risk profile.
And it gets rid of those traditional barriers,
yeah.
The maintenance, the endless paperwork.
All gone. And often the minimum investment is much lower too, offering more flexibility.
So for an investor who maybe likes the stability of property, but is tired of the active management.
Or just values simplicity and diversification.
Selling a physical asset and reinvesting those funds into a lower effort income generating fractional or tokenized option could be a really smart strategic move.
It's the modern way to make sure your capital stays working efficiently in the asset class you like, but on your terms.
It sounds like an optimal solution for maybe a high net worth individual who wants property exposure without the admin burden.
Or anyone who wants that instant diversification and less hassle, frankly. It's becoming much more accessible.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's try and wrap this all up. Timing the exit, it's clearly vital.
Yeah.
But what we've really established is that it's less about, you know, trying to magically guess the single best month to sell.
Which is basically impossible anyway.
Right. It's more about this ongoing process, a continuous strategic assessment.
Constantly balancing that real-time market data we talked about.
With where you are personally, your financial goals.
And always evaluating those future opportunities, including these modern, lower hassle alternatives that are now available.
So it boils down to constantly checking in.
Ultimately, yeah. The decision on when to sell versus when to hold. It really comes down to one simple but quite stark performance question, a metric that every investor needs to ask themselves regularly after looking at all the data.
So what does this all really mean for the listener? What's the core question?
The decision to sell, fundamentally, it's driven by this. Is your money working as hard as it possibly could be right now?
That's simple.
Conceptually simple, yes. Mm-hmm. If your current net returns, factoring in your time, the hassle, the risks, and especially that crucial opportunity cost, if that package falls short of what you could realistically achieve elsewhere,
then it's time.
Then it is unequivocally time to start planning your exit, whether that means selling to buy a different, better performing property or pivoting your capital towards one of these more flexible, perhaps digital real estate solutions. Is your money working hard enough? That's the bottom line.